Hello, I'm Anne Hurst, the terrified writer, and welcome to Life is Scary, the podcast for creative dreamers that unpicks what scares us and stops us doing the things we love, explores how we deal with our fears, and how it's possible to turn them to our advantage to live a full and fulfilled creative life. Hey, welcome to episode 6 already. Today we're talking about the artist's curse, rejection. Woo! Please don't think it's a misery party, it's really not. Rejection isn't all that bad, although it can feel that way sometimes. I'm joined by author, copywriter and local historian Belinda Moore. Belinda also writes a beautifully poetic blog called Taking the Air, which is definitely worth a visit. I'll include a link on the blog and I'll put it in the podcast summary. Bit of housekeeping before we crack on. This episode is a bit longer than usual, but this is a broad subject and we had so much to talk about. Also, stick around for that awful rejection story I promised in the previous episode. That's coming up in the end. Finally, as is becoming the norm, it would seem, the technical gremlins were out during the recording of this, so halfway through we had to relocate where the better computer was. You don't really need me to tell you all this, as it becomes very clear when it all happens. I am joined by Belinda Moore, a fellow writer who lives just up the road. And Belinda and I met last year.
I think so. With your fun palaces.
With fun palaces, that's right. And since then we've stayed in touch and we help each other, we support each other and we are shoulders to cry on. How are you, Belinda?
I'm very well, thank you. And I love your kitchen. It's really nice being here.
Thank you. Yes, we're recording in the kitchen today, so there'll be background noise, so it's going to be a bit different, and we might get interrupted by builders from time to time. Occasionally someone might come and ask me a question about lights or light fittings.
We can answer that.
We can. Okay. So today's subject is rejection.
I'm trying not to have a break in my voice because it's very upsetting.
Well, this is why I thought I'd get Belinda in, because it's much easier to talk about rejection when you're not alone.
I think it's really difficult to talk about in all sorts of ways. It's difficult to talk about as a writer. It's difficult to talk about as a human being.
It is, and unfortunately, it's inevitable, isn't it?
Yes, it is inevitable. And we were talking beforehand. I earn my living as a copywriter or a communications manager, so I'm used to having my words criticised or turned down. But the thing about writing fiction and having that rejected is it's much closer to you, I think. It's much, if you're trying to do it well, it's very, very much true and close to your heart. It's authentic. That's and true. To have that rejected is awful, just awful.
That's so true. Do you know, we were just talking about this. So I was a copywriter.
Exactly.
And I never used to mind I used to expect my work to be torn apart by my boss because that was the idea. I did the first draft, and as we all know, first drafts are terrible, and they inevitably change it around, and then the client rewrites it anyway. And so you kind of get used to that. But like you say, fiction is a completely different ballgame because it's like bearing your soul. So I'll tell you my first rejection story and then you can swap and tell me yours.
Okay.
So I first approached an agent. Should we give agent names? I don't think we should.
I would if I deliberately forget them.
Do you?
So I honestly don't think I could give a true example remembering the name.
Well, I can tell you exactly. Yeah. I know exactly who the first agent I approached was. And here's how naive I was. I only approached one agent. And she, at the time, she doesn't do this anymore. She does accept online queries. But at the time, she only accepted queries by post. So I agonized for about 3 days over this envelope.
Over the colour of the envelope.
Every single aspect of this submission. Because obviously it was the only submission she was ever going to get, wasn't it?
Any submission she ever
needed.
It was
the only one she was going to get that week, certainly. And I remember painstakingly putting this together with my friend Jules and saying, you know, and asking her to reread every single thing, including my first three chapters, about 15 times. And we eventually sent it off. I think Jules was tearing her hair out at the time, going, just send the bloody thing, would you? She's thinking, poor girl, you know, she's going to get a no anyway. And I naively thought, it'll be fine. Of course it'll be fine. Sent it off and patiently, or rather impatiently, waited for 6 weeks before
this lovely agent came back with a flat no. And I couldn't believe it because I'd just spent a month and a half with my hopes built up, thinking maybe I'll be the one writer that obviously she'll see how much effort I've put in. Yeah. And she'll go, oh, bless her, you know, she's made so much effort. I mean, the fact is, it was a terrible first draft. It wasn't a first draft of my book, sorry. It was a terrible edit of my book, and I sent it off too soon, and I can see that now. Three drafts later, I can see that I was very naive. But even so, it was that first no, even though it was expected, was a massive shock to the system.
Yeah, really horrible. Yeah, absolutely. And I think the same, if I remember, gosh, a long ago, I was talking to you before, I wrote some children's stories, which actually had been published on CDs in the Early Learning Centre for someone. I'd written them as a commercial job, and I kind of rewrote them. But I remember sending those off, and it was a while ago now, and I was amazed. The prompt, definite no's just took me aback, really, because of the world that we both worked in at one time. You're used to discussing stuff and amending and getting on. I have people submitting work to me all the time, and you don't ever give a flat no. You say, look, I had to comment on someone's designs for something yesterday, and I said, look, I really like what you've done with this, but I'm going to have to ask you to try again with this because X, Y, and Z. And that's how you work with people. You don't just write three sentences and say, no, I don't like you, slam their hopes on the floor, but that's what happens.
That is what happens, unfortunately. And I mean, and it's completely understandable. And, you know, since that first one, obviously, I've got to know the publishing world very well. I've been now trying to get into this industry for coming on 5 years. I've been to events. Don't worry about that. The kitchen table is indestructible. I promise you, you could spill anything on here. It's had everything spilled on it, I promise you. Blender's just rubbing away at
I'm trying to rub away at
the oat milk
cup.
It's fine. We're sitting here drinking coffee. So over the years, I've met lots of agents. I've had one-to-ones. I've been to talks. I've been to publishing events. I've been to writing events. I understand.
I have never done that.
Have you not?
No, I find it too upsetting.
Do you? I find it really quite...
I'd be too upset.
I find it reassuring, if I'm honest.
Oh, we can talk about that another time. I don't know. I've never, ever done anything
have
like
you not?
That.
Well, it is interesting on many levels. I did it because I want to know. I want to know what I'm up against. And the truth is, we're up against everybody. Thousands and thousands of people every day, every week, submitting manuscripts that they've poured their heart and soul into, sending them to agents. And agents sitting there trying to do their job, you know, trying to find and represent the best of the best writers they can find. You've got to make your work stand out. But even then, sometimes that isn't enough because of the sheer numbers. Yeah. So agents are not looking to upset people. They have to get through their workload. So they might get, on average, maybe between 10 and 50 submissions a week.
Yeah.
And as well as trying to represent the writers that they represent, they're trying to find new talent. Now, out of those 10 to 50 people a week, they might maybe once a month go through that pile. They might, you know, at the very best, represent one of those writers. So it's incredibly, on the one hand, you can go, oh, what's the point? Why am I doing this? But I just, for me, it was about arming myself with as much information as possible.
I think that's the more intelligent and emotionally intelligent way of doing it.
I don't know.
Yeah, maybe hiding under a stone from them until one of them likes you.
That's also about putting yourself out there.
It is, and I obsessively buy stuff from the when I'm in a station or an airport, I obsessively buy stuff from this week's bestsellers paperback. That
do
I haven't
you?
Read before, so just so that I can get annoyed about how bad some of it is. Because it was
that?
Chosen above mine.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. I have stacks of buy one, get one free from Waterstones, buy one, get one free half price from Waterstones, you know, from that table as you go in,
just
the ones that they're pushing, just so that I can be annoyed at how shoddy they are. Just a lot of them aren't very good. And you think, why are they being chosen? Why are they being chosen then?
Because you're upping their book sales. You do know.
I know I am, yeah. Yeah, I don't think I'd resent that as well, but I can get over that.
So you're buying
I know.
Yeah, that's an interesting way of looking at it, isn't it? When I buy books now, do you find you read differently? I definitely read from the point of view of a writer, and I do read things, especially opening chapters, because that's the thing that, if you're going to go down that traditional publishing route, the opening chapter is the thing that's going to hook the agent in.
It sounds like a real idiot, but I don't. Not from the opening chapters. I certainly read the book, particularly writers that I like. I can read it once and, you know, with passion and quickly because I love it so much. And then I will go back and read it again with a writer's eye and look at how they've constructed it and how they're changing it. But I don't tend to focus on the first chapter, and I probably should.
I don't think it's something I do consciously now. I go, there are some books I'll read and I go, how on earth did somebody pick this up, because I'm not blown away. It's, you know, especially those books where it can take pages and pages and chapters to actually get into it. And funnily enough, I had an editor read my manuscript over the summer, and one of the things that he said, which is why I'm working on my beginning chapter, he said it's much better about 70 pages in, you really start to relax and it becomes more enjoyable to read. Well, of course, that's a crucial piece of feedback, because if it's not going to be interesting or hook people in enough in the first 70 pages, it's not going to hook in somebody who's then got to sell it on.
No, that's true. Yeah, that's absolutely.
Yeah. So, I mean, two books spring to mind immediately for me as having corking openers. And one of them was The Power by Naomi Alderman.
I've not read it.
Have you not? Well, it's one of those, I've written about it on the blog, and it does polarise opinion, it would seem. I seem to say that a lot. I find things that are divisive. But I absolutely loved it. But I thought the opening scene was so compelling.
Really?
I could absolutely see somebody sitting there. Imagine an agent sort of flicking through lots and lots and lots of manuscripts, coming up against it. I mean, Naomi Alderman's well known. But still, her agent must have been blown away and delighted and thrilled if that was what she sent her in the first instance.
Isn't that interesting?
It was brilliant. Honestly, I thought this is blinding.
I'm going to go back now and look at
Sarah Pinborough, who I've just put on the blog this week. Sarah Pinborough's book. She's a crime writer, but her recent one, Cross Her Heart, the opener to that, I couldn't put it down. I then didn't stop reading it until I got to the end.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I think a lot of it is not just about how you submit it, it's how you respond to the rejection, how you take it, how you get over it, how you get on. And you and I have discussed that, and there are some great examples. I love, was talking to you about Mallory Blackman's Desert Island Discs being a really encouraging thing because of her just living through the rejections time and again, time and again, time and again.
Hers is brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah, and what a brilliant career and what a great thing she's done with her writing. But she sat through 80, I think, in the days when they were paper letters coming through your door.
She had over 82.
Is that right? Yeah.
After our conversation, I went to, I went online and had a look.
Mm.
She said, didn't she? She was going to keep writing until she had 1,000 rejections. Yeah. If you submit your, because you're like me, aren't you? You've written you wrote your book and you've been submitting to agents.
Yeah, and I have phases of, I'll submit it to say half a dozen, and then I'll stop and maybe submit it to another half a dozen, because actually it's quite a faff to try and do it well, isn't it? You've got to get the right bits together in the right order,
and you really have to tailor every single query, don't you? So
it's not
just a case of sending it out. You've got to dedicate time and effort to finding the right agent, finding whether they're taking submissions at the moment. You've got to this is great advice, by the way, for anyone listening. You must do your research. I did a stupid thing when I submitted last time. I copied and pasted a letter, which was a template, and then I was adapting each letter, which I think is fair enough.
Yeah, because I think it's fair enough too.
There's certain stuff in there that you want every one of them to hear. But you adapt each letter, which I was painstakingly doing, but I think I was just tired. And I said to one agent that he represented a certain author, who he didn't, it was the author that the previous person I'd sent it to
so
represented.
Easy to do.
But what it meant was I emailed him straight away and I said, in my haste, I'm going to be really honest with you. I copied and pasted a letter and I was adapting it and I accidentally said, you represent such and such and you don't. And I know you don't. And I'm sorry, that's my mistake. And he came back and almost immediately and he said, please don't worry about it. But thank you so much for letting me know and I won't hold it against you, honestly.
Oh, that's nice.
I mean, guy still didn't say no. He still didn't say yes, bastard. Yeah. Never mind. He was a lovely fella.
Unfortunately, at this point, we had to take a short break because my computer decided it couldn't cope. So we relocated in the office on the desktop. You didn't need to know that. Continue. So we're going to go back to a day in the life of someone who's just been rejected.
Awful. Just awful.
Belinda, tell me what happens. You get your rejection letter in the morning.
Yeah, my rejection email.
Rejection email. Yeah, we'll come on
to
letters.
So you see it come up in the subject header, and the subject header is usually your name and the name of your book because that's what they ask you to put in the submission email.
Can I interrupt you there? Mm. When you see your name and you know it's from an agent, you see the name of your name and the name of your book, do you take a moment before you open the email?
Oh, yeah. I sometimes take half a day.
Okay, good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, okay.
No, sometimes I take half a day. It depends. If I'm busy work-wise, I'll know it's there and deliberately not look at it until I've got time to take it in because I assume that it's a rejection and I know I'll get upset about it. And if I'm trying to do a piece of work, I can't afford to be upset at that time, so I need to postpone that. And then I think, well, if it isn't and if it's really exciting and they're asking for more details or what have you, then that won't matter if I read it later either. So yeah, I definitely clock it and then I try and resist opening it usually.
I am exactly the same. Exactly the same. In fact, yeah, I think the last one, well, not the last one I got, because that one is the one we're going to come on to, but a recent one, I did see my name and I thought, how long can I prolong the hope?
Yes, exactly.
How long can I hold out and just have just maybe a little while to just imagine what it would be like if it wasn't that outcome?
Yes,
Just for 20 minutes, I'm going to go and sit and have a coffee and imagine what it would be like if it was a really positive outcome.
Absolutely.
I don't know how helpful that is. It's not. It often makes it worse.
I don't know that it does. I don't know. I think fantasising about stuff like that is actually a really good thing to do. It's about being creative and about making stories about things. I used to have a friend who I thought he wrote brilliantly, actually, and he hasn't so far got published, but his thing was to work out where he and his agent were going to go to lunch. That was his sit and imagine world.
Yes.
Whereas mine was always making notes for my Booker acceptance speech. Mm. So I think you have to have a thing that you do prior to opening that email in your head when you're having your cup of tea.
Yeah.
And it's okay because it's just playing with your imagination and that's what we do.
And we're allowed to do that. Mm,
absolutely.
We? Yes.
So you can work out your restaurants or you can work out your speech.
I think I always imagine my reaction.
Like what will it be?
I still haven't worked it out. I sort of feel I'll be a bit speechless.
But will you be on, you'll probably be on your own in the house or anyway,
I do have this fantasy of getting the call and then jumping straight on a train, going straight to London to meet my husband with a bottle of champagne.
That's
going,
nice.
It's happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is massively overblowing the significance of it, I'm sure. But to me, it's not.
Not to you.
I feel like I'll just send the kids a text and go, I'll be back later.
Yeah.
let yourselves in, make your own tea. I'll be back tonight.
So
there is that lovely sort of fantasy world. But in the reality of it, when you get, inevitably, when you do open it up, how does it affect you?
I think it's just really sad. You just feel like you've been rejected as a person. This, you've been telling your truth, whether someone else likes it or not, and the fact that it's not wanted. I take really, really personally, probably much more than I should, probably, because as you rightly said, you're one of thousands. And
I think it doesn't make a difference. And I don't think there is any should or shouldn't about it. I think even though they will, that the industry tells you not to take it personally, and even though we know in our hearts it's not a personal attack, it can't help but feel like a bit of a personal jab. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Just a little dig.
Absolutely.
You can't help it. It's human nature.
Yeah.
It's human nature to just feel a little bit deflated, like you have just been told you're not good enough.
The more you get, the more you get better at accepting them, I think.
Yeah.
And not getting too upset about them. I get rid of mine. I delete them almost immediately. And you were saying that you don't. But I bought a couple that had slipped through the net. And shall I read one?
Yeah.
We thought that that was kind of a standard nice.
This is what we think is... Can I just say as well, you know, we've just been talking about the fantasy bit.
Yeah.
Is it not a massive come down to now be talking about the rejection? I was really in that world for a second. I was really enjoying that minute. And now it feels like, oh. But I think this is what it's like. This is how it feels, really.
Yeah.
So this is what we consider to be a standard response, isn't it?
Many thanks for sending me this material, which I read with interest. Although I have considered this carefully, I'm afraid it just doesn't quite grab my imagination in the way that it must for me to offer to represent it. So I shall have to follow my gut instinct and pass on this occasion. I'm sorry to be so disappointing, but thanks for thinking of us. Of course, this is a totally subjective view, so do keep trying other agents, and I sincerely wish you every success with it elsewhere.
You see,
so it's a polite no.
It's a very polite no, and there's not really much else you can do with it, is there?
No.
There really isn't. I mean, I can give you a couple of examples of mine as well, but what you've got here is quite interesting because you've got the Patricia Highsmith book on writing, which is, what is it, Plotting and Writing Suspense Fiction.
Which is a really interesting book, actually, which you loaned me. Thank you very much. And there's a lot of good tips for writing novels in it. But towards the end, she talks about her then eighth book.
Her eighth book.
And this is someone who's... She's writing this when she's in the States, actually, and it's quite important. So she's got a very fine track record of having stuff successfully published, having movies made of her work, selling lots and lots of copies. But still, and this is quoting directly from it, this second and present version of The Two Faces of January was also rejected out of hand by Harper and Row, and this time I thought they were wrong, though I shelved the book, mentally at least, and did not know what to do except to write another book. These little setbacks, writers must learn to take like Spartans. A brief curse, perhaps, then tighten the belt a notch and go on to something new. Of course, with enthusiasm, courage and optimism, because without these three elements, you cannot produce anything good. I heard the news about the second version of January while in Positano in June of 1962. I remember I was surprised and baffled, but somehow not downcast. After all, it was my seventh or eighth book. I had had rejections before, and rejections do become easier to bear as time goes on. More important, I for once thought that I was right about liking the book. I did not feel that I had done a shoddy piece of work, but I did nothing about the book, went back home and began to think about my prison book. A few months later, when I was in London briefly, I gave my publishers Heinemann a ring and mentioned the January rejection. "Let us see it," said the Heinemann editor. I did, and Heinemann published it as it stood. Several months later, the Crime Writers Association in England chose it for the best foreign crime novel of the year and gave me a reward, a dagger, which I use to this day to open letters. Such is the fate of a twice-rejected book.
Amazing story.
So this is Patricia, take heart and be like a Spartan.
So this is Patricia Highsmith, a very well-respected author and incredibly talented. And this is her eighth book.
Her eighth
book was rejected out of hand.
Twice by publishers that she's been to before.
And
you think, how dare they?
How dare they? Kind of, and then, when it does get published as it stood, as in not edited one fraction from that point, it then goes on to win an award.
Yeah.
Where's the...
I don't think there is logic.
There is no logic, and there's no sense. And I think, as writers, we can do is take heart from that.
Yeah, and be stoic, well, it's Spartan totally. In her thing, but be strong and just carry on is what she says, isn't it?
I think
having the belief to say that she hadn't written a shoddy book, it wasn't...
No.
She still believed in what she'd done.
I've got some great little anecdotal rejections here that I've found on the tinternet. So these are real excerpts from real rejections. And if I give you the rejection, you can see if you can guess who the author
who is.
Okay. There certainly isn't enough genuine talent for us to take notice.
I don't know.
Why would you?
The Beatles, I don't know.
It's Sylvia Plath.
Is it?
Yeah.
How hurtful would that be?
I know. And especially for her. That's not...
That would just...
That would
so hurtful.
The edge. What would... Oh, it would be extremely rotten taste to say nothing of being horribly cruel should we want to publish it.
No. That's so... They're so
That's
rude.
That's so rude. That's about Ernest Hemingway's The Torrents of Spring.
Brilliant.
And this one, which I love. I'm sorry, Mr. Kipling, but you just don't know how to use the English language.
Oh, that's
and I'm assuming
fantastic.
that's not Mr. Kipling Cakes.
I don't think it's Mr. Kipling.
It's not Mr. The author of this book is beyond psychiatric help. That's J.G. Ballard.
Really?
They're just brilliant. It just goes to show how subjective the whole thing
Completely.
Is. Whenever I get a knockback, I always just think, well... It wasn't right for them, and I'm a step closer to the person it is right for.
Yeah.
That's the optimistic
That's a good
way
of
to see
it.
I do see them as stepping stones, and I do learn from them as well. I mean, some of them you get quite constructive feedback from, which is great. I really enjoy it when you don't get a standard one and they're constructive, but not many agents will do that unless they think there's something there worth sort of mentioning. And of course, we're talking about traditional publishing.
Yeah, and
this is the toughest way to do it. Undoubtedly, it's the toughest way to do it because it's such a crowded place. But, you know, there are other ways to publish your book. And we won't talk about it in this one. But I think in another podcast, we can talk about the different publishing routes that there are. I mean, it's so easy now to go out and publish yourself. I think it does require a mindset and an amount of effort and time that
I think
you've got to be really, I think you have to be quite savvy about the whole thing. I'm just not quite there yet. I don't feel confident enough to do that.
I think you've got to be prepared to market it and market it and market it and market it and market it.
I think so. One of the things that I have considered doing, and I might do it as part of my What Scares You challenge that I do each week, which is to sort of challenge myself to do something that scares me. And one of the things I've considered is serialising it on the blog. Actually putting it out there for people to read.
Yeah.
Now, that is so scary that I don't think I'm there yet either. Also, I do need to rewrite that first chapter. Got to get that done. Speaking, though, of other means of publication, I'm just going to talk now quickly about my favourite rejection I ever had.
Yeah, I do. Yeah,
which is a lovely story for all writers out there. This is the sort of thing that really does give you hope. So this came from Bookature, which is an online digital publisher. They're a very successful digital publisher, and they're a very successful model, and they're extremely professional. And you submit your work to them without going through an agent. It is possible to go through an agent, but you can submit directly to them, and they will consider it as they would any other publication that comes their way. I got a really lovely rejection back from them.
Do they have any kind of best-selling mainstream authors on their books that you know of?
I do know an author called Kerry Fisher who's been published through them. They have hundreds of authors. Hundreds.
Oh,
have a look online. I met Kerry Fisher at an event, and she's an unusual author, Kerry, because she's been published traditionally. She's self-published, and she's also been published through digital.
Interesting.
Yeah, so she's gone all three routes. So she's a great person to talk to,
and
very lovely with it. So I had this rejection. Dear Anne, firstly, thank you so much for taking the time to send us Kiss Me. We really appreciate your interest. See, that's nice. I already realise they've read it because they've put the name of my book in there. We're very aware of the hard work and effort that has gone into your submission and think you have an interesting premise. However, after careful consideration, we don't feel that Kiss Me is quite right for us at Bookature. This is, in many ways, more of a criticism of us than of you. We are a very commercial digital publisher,
and need to hone our positioning very precisely. I think we would really struggle to pitch this novel to our readers with the 1980s setting and your more literary style.
Fantastic. No, I think that's a brilliant rejection.
That's lovely. And then she goes on to say, I believe a book like this actually does need a more traditional publishing approach to do it justice. Are you listening, agents? Did you hear what she said? But the writing is great, and thank you so much for the enjoyable read.
That is really
lovely.
You see,
I read that and thought, oh my God, she said my writing was great and it was an enjoyable read. Yeah. You see, I was made up with that. Yeah. Even though it was a no, I was absolutely made up with that.
It's so encouraging.
That was so encouraging. Mm. And then in the same vein, over the summer, I had a sort of standard rejection from this one guy who had originally shown a bit of interest in it. He rejected me.
A traditional agent.
Mm. He rejected it. And then 2 weeks later, sent me the identical rejection letter.
Oh,
again.
That's awful.
I know. And I was just, Phil.
Awful.
You've already said it once. Stop rubbing my nose in it. I get it. It's a no.
Yeah.
So before we wrap, I'm going to just talk about my worst rejection, which I mentioned in the last podcast. I said I have got the best rejection story ever, or
you
worst
really
rejection
have.
Story ever. Mm. So the other week, I was working in the kitchen and the post arrived. And two items of post hit the doormat at the same time. It was weird because both envelopes had exactly the same postmark on them. They were both from exactly the same company. One of the envelopes was very small and thin and very pristine. And the other was an A4 self-addressed envelope. I recognised my own writing. And it was very raggedy and it was a bit torn here and there. But they had both come from the same place, which I recognised as a literary agent. There aren't many literary agents that ask you to send a postal submission, but this one did, and I knew what was in mine. There were two envelopes. One was addressed to me, that one, and one was addressed to my husband. Now, I made the fatal mistake, I realise now, of submitting my work to the same literary agent that represents my husband, not the same person, but the same company. Although his work is one of non-fiction, it is being published next year. So in one envelope was my rejection, and in the other envelope was his advance check for the book that's coming out
so
next
awful.
Year.
So awful.
And they decided to post both of these things out at exactly the same time. How cruel is that? And I'll just to make it even worse. So I know you're probably thinking, well, why did you bother? Why did you submit? Well, I submitted to them because they're a great agent. And I thought that the fiction and the non-fiction departments were very different. And that I thought they wouldn't. Naively, I thought they wouldn't actually speak to each other, which normally they don't, to be fair, because they work in different ways. But it just so happened in the summer, about 6-8 weeks ago, Chris had an email, this is my husband, had an email from his agent, Andrew, saying, unless there is another person with your surname living at the same address as you that you don't know am I to assume that your wife has written a book and she's submitted it because I've just seen it on the slush pile, which is the thing. And Chris said, oh, yeah, you know, yes, but she didn't want me to tell you. And, you know, which I didn't. I said, I just want to do this. And I don't want you to get involved. And he said, oh, no, it's fine. I'll put it in front of the right person. So it's even worse because it's slightly come as a recommendation. And what's even worse than that is inside the envelope was my chapters, my synopsis, and obviously the rejection letter, which was very polite, and it wasn't for her for whatever reason. But she'd also included the query letter. On the query letter was a handwritten note from Chris's agent saying, this is my client's wife. Do have a look at this. Oh my God, it could not have been worse. And so when I got this, I was absolutely devastated, and I behaved really badly for a whole day.
Oh, only a day. I'd have stolen the check and behaved really badly for much longer, I think.
It is terrible because my poor husband, who actually has, to be fair to him, he writes beautifully. He does. And his book is going to be fantastic. It's coming out next year. It's called No Bullshit Leadership. I have to give him a plug. His name's Chris Hurst. It's going to be a great book. It is a great book. But I just thought the thing about sending both of those things, they're going to the same place. I'm surprised they didn't put them in the same envelope. Exactly. Can you imagine? Put them in the same envelope, just with a note saying, "Can you? And by the way, can you pass this on to your husband?" Or it's even worse, send him the check with a letter and going, "By the way, can you tell Anne it's a no?"
Oh, so bad.
It would have saved them a bit of postage. Anyway, so that was my story. I don't think any future ones are going to top that.
It would be really hard to top it, actually, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
It really would.
I don't think they will. We're going to wrap up now, and it's been an absolute pleasure having Belinda here. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
And let's hope this doesn't delete itself this time. If you enjoyed the podcast, please subscribe, rate, and leave a review. I ask this because it really does help listeners find us. Also, it's just like really nice. Yeah. If you want to get in touch, you can email me, anne@theterrifiedwriter.com. That's Anne, no E. I'm on Instagram @theterrifiedwriter, on Twitter @AnneHurst, and the blog is theterrifiedwriter.com. Speak to you next time. Bye.